This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another Republican retires. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Wednesday, October 25. Glad you're on board. Here's what's up this hour.
Arizona Senator Jeff Flake, considered a vulnerable GOP incumbent, has announced he will not seek re-election next year.
Washington Post says the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee paid for the research that led to the Russia dossier.
Clayton Kershaw and Justin Turner powered the Dodgers over the Astros in Game 1 of the World Series in L.A. Game 2 is tonight.
And will the Harvey Weinstein case be a watershed moment for sexual harassment?
Sensational it is, but how much of a watershed is really another story. So I started looking at some of the other cases of what people had called watershed moments, and I sort of concluded that many of these moments really aren't watersheds, and the real watershed moments that do occur often pass unnoticed at the time.
USA Today correspondent Rick Hampson on expected watershed moments that failed and unexpected ones that did become watersheds. Anti-establishment Republicans now say political momentum is on their side. The latest development, Arizona Senator Jeff Flake has announced he will not seek re-election next year. Mr. Flake was considered one of the most vulnerable Senate Republicans up for re-election in 2018. Meanwhile, in a speech, Mr. Flake called President Trump's behavior in office not normal.
Resentment is not a governing philosophy. At some point, we've got to actually have policies that work, not just rile up the base.
His retirement opens the way for other Republicans to jump into the primary and run against Kelly Ward, the candidate backed by former White House advisor Steve Bannon, who has been challenging Mr. Flake. The criticism highlighted an escalating battle for control of the party between its elected leaders and activists. Separately, Tennessee Senator Bob Corker, who has also decided to retire, engaged in another war of words on Twitter with Mr. Trump, saying he regretted his support for the president's White House campaign. President Trump is trying to forge the party unity needed to pass reform and other legislative goals before next year's midterm elections. Yesterday, he met with Senate Republicans over lunch. Tax reform, as expected, was the main topic, even as lawmakers discussed infrastructure and health care with the president as well. Here's Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
If there's anything all Republicans think are important to the country and to our party, it's comprehensive tax reform.
With the tax plan, Mr. Trump is still trying for a major legislative win after Republicans failed this summer to pass legislation to dismantle Obamacare. The Senate passed a related budget plan last week, but specifics on the tax legislation are still being worked out. The president essentially needs consensus from the 52-member Senate Republican conference to get a simple 51-vote majority to pass tax reform and most other legislative proposals. President Trump says his unpredictability is an asset. When does unpredictability, though, serve a president, leaving him flexibility while keeping his opponents off guard? And when does it turn into a liability, leaving friends convinced they can't count on him and enemies potentially miscalculating his true intentions? Analysis from Wall Street Journal Executive Washington Editor Jerry Seib. Jerry, how do you see it?
You know, one of the things Donald Trump told us in the 2016 campaign several times, really, was that he liked being unpredictable. That is his style. He thinks it works for him. It keeps his enemies off balance, and voters like it. And it's better overseas not to tell your foes what you're going to do, and you keep people guessing at home, and that's basically, in his view, a strategic asset. Well, I think you're now, that he's president, facing the question of is unpredictability a good thing or a bad thing for a president? And, you know, this comes to mind in part because of the way the president has moved back and forth and then back again on health care in the last couple of weeks. You know, he was for a bipartisan compromise that would have kept payments to insurance companies to help finance low-income insurance policies under Obamacare, and then he eliminated those payments, and then he was for a bipartisan deal that would save them, and then he said he couldn't live with them, and then his budget director said on TV over the weekend, well, he might if the changes included some things to tweak Obamacare that conservatives like more than continuing subsidy payments to insurance companies. So anyway, it has left people in his own party, to say nothing of the opposition party, scratching their heads and wondering where his bottom line is. And the question is that a good thing or a bad thing if you're president?
Has there been an explanation for this switching?
Not really. I mean, I think the explanation that Mick Mulvaney, his budget director, gave on TV was that, well, the continuing the insurance payments might be okay, except that we need more things that conservatives want, such as eliminating the individual mandate that requires people to buy a health care policy or pay a penalty on their taxes, and more provisions to increase the use of health savings accounts. So it's kind of a negotiation, I suppose. That's the explanation that amounts to. I think some Republicans think that the back and forth on this one simply reflects the president's misunderstanding of the dynamic, that he thought this bipartisan agreement had more support among Republicans than it really did.
What about on the global stage, this unpredictability?
You know, what the president has said, both as first as candidate and then as president, is that it's not useful for the U.S. leader to signal what he's going to do overseas, that particularly in a military context, if you tell ISIS how long you're going to stay in Iraq, they'll take advantage of that. If you tell the North Koreans exactly what your bottom line is, then they'll know how to construct their own strategy to deal with you, so keep them guessing. And, you know, there is certain logic to that, but on the other hand, it can produce some miscalculations overseas in which your foes in particular don't understand what your bottom line really is, and they could easily miscalculate, and you worry about that in the context of North Korea, not knowing how much of what the president says is bluster and how much of it signals his real intentions, and that can be, I think, particularly dangerous.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal Executive Washington Editor Jerry Seib about his piece entitled "Where Donald Trump's Unpredictability Could Hurt Him." You write, too, that because Mr. Trump has no fixed ideology, he sees no need to defend a position simply on philosophical grounds. Explain.
Well, I think that's part of the issue on the health care plan. I think he just wants a fix for Obamacare to get done. He doesn't really have strongly held ideological views about what should be in that fix. And so if Democrats have some ideas that might get a deal done, he can be for that. If conservatives have ideas that they feel very strongly about, he can be for that. I think mostly what he wants to do in a lot of cases is simply get something done. And unlike some others, both you know, within his own administration, but also on Capitol Hill, who have very strongly held views that say, if I'm going to vote for something or if I'm going to endorse something in health care or taxes or the budget, it has to include these things and can't include those things. There are very few of those have to include or can't include things for Donald Trump. He's much more transactional. And so it's one of the reasons he can be unpredictable is that he feels free to shift around because he doesn't have strongly held ideological views.
Thanks, Jerry. It's Wall Street Journal Executive Washington Editor Jerry Seib. It is 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell Small Business Tech Advisor. Blockbuster story from the Washington Post. The Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee helped fund research that resulted in a now famous dossier containing allegations about President Trump's connections to Russia. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The Post says the Clinton campaign hired a Washington firm called Fusion GPS to conduct the research. Fusion GPS then hired Christopher Steele to write the dossier. He's a former British intelligence officer. The story also says the Clinton campaign continued to fund Fusion GPS's research until just days before Election Day. After the election, the FBI agreed to pay Mr. Steele to continue gathering intelligence about Mr. Trump and Russia, but pulled out of the arrangement after Mr. Steele was identified by the media. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Arizona Senator Jeff Flake, a key moderate Republican, says he won't seek re-election and blasted President Trump in the process. The 54-year-old expressed remorse at the isolationist direction in which he has seen his party moving.
There's a very narrow path now as a Republican. I'm a traditional Republican, limited government, economic freedom, free trade, pro-immigration. And that's a very narrow path right now in a Republican primary.
Flake says the impulse to scapegoat and belittle threatens to turn the Americans into a fearful, backward-looking people. The Senate has passed a $36.5 billion emergency aid measure to refill disaster accounts, provide a cash infusion to Puerto Rico, and bail out the federal flood insurance program. It brings the total approved by Congress during this fall's hurricane season to more than $50 billion, and that's before requests expected soon to cover damage to water and navigation projects, crops, public buildings and infrastructure, and to help homeowners without flood insurance rebuild. According to newly released FBI documents, police were warned that the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooter had threatened to kill his mother and students before the 2012 massacre. The agency yesterday released more than 1,500 pages of documents on the investigation into the mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut that left 26 children and teachers dead. One woman told investigators she overheard Adam Lanza threaten his mother, and she called Newtown police and Sandy Hook to tell them about the threats. But police said Lanza's mother owned the firearms and there was nothing they could do. Changing jerseys to beat the 103-degree heat, Dodgers ace Clayton Kershaw delivered a signature performance pitching Los Angeles past the Houston Astros 3-1 last night in the World Series opener.
This team is a really good hitting team. You know, they hit a lot of homers, they don't strike out, and so there's a lot of there's a little room for error.
Game two this evening in L.A. And Robert Guillaume, who rose from squalid beginnings in St. Louis slums to become a star in stage musicals and win Emmy Awards, has died. He played a butler who spoke his mind in TV sitcoms Soap and Benson.
This is some place you got here. I came here as a favor to Mrs. Tate. And the dogs tried to kill me, the gardener tried to drown me, the security men searched me, and now I got a stormtrooper after my shoes.
Guillaume, who earned a Tony nomination for his work in the first all-black version of Guys and Dolls, was 89.
All right, thank you, Jen. It's 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by Cintas. More than 1 million businesses trust Cintas to help them open their doors with confidence. Learn how they can get your business ready at Cintas.com. Cintas, ready for the workday. You probably thought you'd never hear this type of story again. One of the country's largest mall operators, GGP, has broken ground on a new shopping mall, a seemingly risky bet in a world where retailers are closing hundreds of stores. Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner says this new one in Norwalk, Connecticut, along the coast, could be one of the last enclosed malls ever built in the U.S. Suzanne, what's up here?
We're not seeing a lot of big enclosed regional malls being built lately. In fact, there were only six built in the last couple of years, and there's really hardly any under construction right now. But one of the big mall operators, GGP, has decided to break ground in Connecticut on a new upscale shopping mall. Very unusual in these times where shoppers are kind of, you know, going to malls less frequently, buying more online, spending more on entertainment. It's a bit of a controversial move.
All right, so why does GGP feel that this mall will work there in Norwalk, Connecticut?
You know, they've studied the area. They feel like, you know, it's got very, very good demographics, high income level. It's along what's called Connecticut's Gold Coast, near, you know, very upscale towns like Greenwich, Connecticut. And there, while there are three other malls in Fairfield County, those malls are a bit more down market. Their anchors are Macy's, JCPenney. This mall will be anchored by Nordstrom and Bloomingdale, so it has a bit more of an upscale tenant base. And, you know, right now, residents who live there, to go to a Nordstrom, they have to drive to White Plains, which in traffic can take you something like 45 minutes. So they feel like it's an underserved market.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner. Her piece is called Big Mall Operator Bets That America Needs a New Mall. She's talking about one scheduled to open in 2019 in Norwalk, Connecticut, along the Connecticut Sound, the Long Island Sound there. The CEO of this mall operator said this is probably the last mall they'll build, maybe for some long period of time. But he also said that the death of shopping malls has been exaggerated.
Right. So while there's not a lot of new development, there is a lot of redevelopment. That means mall operators are plowing hundreds of millions of dollars a year to upgrade their existing properties and swap out, you know, stores that maybe aren't doing so well, like Sears or a JCPenney, with new types of tenants, like grocery stores, maybe a Whole Foods, a TJ Maxx. And so what he's saying is that, you know, people are still going to malls, but what's inside those malls is changing.
Is it true that they entertain the thought of a hotel in this mall?
That was part of the original plan, and GGP scrapped that. The mall owner scrapped that after, you know, realizing it just wasn't viable. The cost to build the hotel, they wouldn't be able to recoup the cost with the revenue that they would be generating.
Thanks, Suzanne. Wall Street Journal reporter Suzanne Kapner. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. ThisMorning@CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Glad you're with us on this Wednesday, October 25. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Report says the Clinton campaign and DNC paid for research that led to the Russia dossier. House is investigating the Uranium One deal. Arizona Senator Jeff Flake will not run for re-election. Congress wants to know how a two-man company in Montana got a $300 million contract for Puerto Rico cleanup. Dodgers beat the Astros in Game 1 of the World Series in less than 2.5 hours. And what happened when a man strapped himself to 100 big helium balloons in South Africa? That story in about 20 minutes. A former Weinstein Company production assistant has come forward alleging that Harvey Weinstein sexually assaulted her after her repeated refusals. Mimi Haley detailed her accusations yesterday in a press conference in New York held by attorney Gloria Allred.
He held me down on the bed. I tried to get away, or tried to get him off of me, and kept asking him to stop, but it was impossible. He was extremely persistent and physically overpowering.
The Harvey Weinstein scandal, by the way, is being hailed as a watershed moment, but many moments that first appear to be watersheds aren't. And many that really are watersheds become apparent only in retrospect. USA Today national correspondent Rick Hampson looked at some examples. Rick, explain.
Many of these moments really aren't watersheds, and the real watershed moments that do occur often pass unnoticed at the time. And I was wondering if the Harvey Weinstein case fell into the former category, something that seems like a big deal now, but won't a couple of years from now.
Mm. All right, so one of the things we've seen come out of this, as you point out, is the hashtag MeToo campaign on social media. Is that an indicator this might be a start of something or no?
I'm somewhat skeptical about the role of social media here. It's great that people are able to share their stories, but when the next big story comes along, social media tends to move on to that. And the question is, what effect is it having, say, on corporate HR departments? It's not clear that it would have any. Furthermore, a lot of these Me Too stories are experiences people have had in the past. The current reality might be quite different. If this happened 10, 20 years ago to you, if you were a woman sexually harassed in the workplace, maybe there's been reform in your company, in your HR department, so that they really have a much tighter lock on this. Mm-hmm. So it's good to hear the stories, but it doesn't mean that things are going to be changing in the future as a result of them.
What were a couple of the events that you looked at that maybe some thought might be a watershed moment but turned out not to be?
I think there's two outstanding examples. One is the Newtown massacre in 2012 at Sandy Hook Elementary. I think a lot of people assumed there was going to be some sort of gun control legislation. Now, regardless of what you think about gun control, it did seem that this sort of a thing was going to give impetus to the political forces that favored it. It didn't happen at all. Not only did nothing get passed through Congress, gun sales actually increased. Another example would be the 2008 presidential election. Now, there's no question the election of our first African-American president was itself a watershed. But in terms of an agenda, a lot of what Obama achieved now is very much under fire by his successor. So on that score, you have to say, was it really the watershed people thought it would be?
We're speaking with USA Today national correspondent Rick Hampson. He's written a piece entitled, "Will Harvey Weinstein Case Be a Watershed Moment?" Experience says probably not. How about events we might have overlooked as watershed moments?
A couple of examples come to mind. In 1998, a University of Wyoming student, Matthew Shepard, was a gay man, was murdered. Since then, we've had a real crackdown on hate crimes on almost every kind of police jurisdiction. Back in 1980, a woman who had lost her child in an automobile accident founded Mothers Against Drunk Driving, which has had a revolutionary impact on our attitudes about alcohol and vehicles, the notion of a designated driver, the drinking age. These people have had an enormous political effect, and the date they were founded, which was September 5, 1980, it's safe to say that nobody back then was saying, well, this is really a watershed moment.
Yeah.
But it was.
Interesting. Explain the reasons you put together about the Weinstein case, why it's so unusual, and is this challenge, as you say, who try to predict its eventual impact?
Unusual events can be watersheds. Pearl Harbor doesn't get attacked every day, and Pearl Harbor, the attack thereon, was clearly a watershed. But in other ways, if something happens, and it's really so exceptional and unusual, it's not going to affect the normal course of events. And I think the Weinstein case might fit into that. For one thing, the accuser is such an ogre, is being presented as such an ogre, that he isn't necessarily your average workplace sexual harasser who needs to get his head turned around. This guy was a serial predator, allegedly, over many years. And similarly, the people who were accusing him are some of the most famous women in America, Gwyneth Paltrow and Angelina Jolie. Hardly the status of your normal working stiff who finds herself or himself, you know, under attack on the workplace. Also, just the setting of Hollywood. This case is getting so much attention because it's Hollywood and it's celebrities. Most workplaces are not like Hollywood. Most workplaces don't have, you know, beautiful people striving to become world famous, being judged by powerful people whose standards are completely subjective.
Thanks, Rick. USA Today national correspondent Rick Hampson. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday. Welcome in. Beyond the headlines now, This Morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, when you're a suspected criminal on the run from police, you're probably going to do everything you can do to find a great hiding spot. One man, however, picked a spot that was a little too good and had to call the cops to be rescued. Salt Lake City police say 46-year-old Shane Paul Owen called dispatchers for help yesterday, more than 6 hours after he accidentally locked himself in a church's boiler room. Officers were looking for Owen on Monday because he is a suspect in a string of burglaries and had warrants out for his arrest. Police say an officer spotted him and attempted to pull his vehicle over, but Owen fled, got out of his car, and ran into the church. Now, even if he hadn't gotten stuck, it doesn't look like Owen stood much of a chance of getting away anyway, as a SWAT team was stationed at the church waiting outside for him to emerge. It's like something out of a movie. I can imagine the SWAT team sitting out there kind of waiting for him to come out, you know, kind of looking at their watches like, you know, come on, we got to speed this along a little bit. Then finally they get a phone call. Hey, can you help me? I can't get out.
Wow. 6 hours.
Yeah, 6 hours. Everyone just kind of sitting around waiting for him to come out.
I don't think that's holding out very long, actually.
No.
Now, if you say like 3 days,
yeah,
you might have had a better shot.
Maybe he was getting hungry.
Yeah, maybe.
Thirsty, I don't know.
Yeah, you do need
to go
water.
Had to go to the bathroom,
true.
Maybe, you know.
True.
You know, they do have bathrooms in jail, as far as I know.
Wow.
And, Gordon, if you're planning on visiting your local deli or convenience store this morning or around lunchtime today, you might want to watch out where you step. According to the Associated Press, a Delaware judge says a woman who says she slipped on the remnants of a sandwich can continue her lawsuit against a popular convenience store chain. Lisa Donovan says she slipped and fell on hoagie guts, or discarded sandwich pieces, in the parking lot of a Wawa store in 2014. Defense attorneys asked for a summary judgment in their favor, arguing that Donovan had failed to identify a liability expert on the issue of whether the store was negligent. Donovan argued that an expert was unnecessary because the need to sweep up trash in the parking lot is something the average person can understand. The judge agreed with Donovan last week, saying a splattered hoagie in a parking lot is no different than water on the floor of a grocery store. In other words, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that cold cuts can be slippery.
Mm.
This story is of particular interest of mine. I'm a big fan of sandwiches, number one.
Yes.
Number two, specifically, Wawa hoagies, also a big fan of those.
Really?
My family and I visit Wawa often for their hoagies if we don't feel like making dinner one night.
I see.
So perhaps they could have called me in as a sandwich expert if they needed one. Thankfully, it doesn't look like they're going to need one.
Here's the thing. I don't disagree that the stuff needs to be swept up.
Yes.
I've never heard of hoagie guts as being any sort of hazard. Okay, ice during the winter. Okay. I guess the thing is, like, what's a reasonable amount of time, too?
Right.
Like, what if the guy who had walked out of the store
just dropped it.
Yeah. Like, the store's going to be penalized for that?
Then
you need a few minutes to identify that there's, cleanup needed in aisle 9, I don't know.
I feel like the defense has it's another witness on their side.
And then, what you really might need an expert for is, which of the guts pieces are the slipperiest? Is it salami? Is it ham?
I'm going to go with
roast
ham.
Roast beef?
Yeah. Swiss cheese.
13 minutes now in front of the hour.
Prices are for base buildings only. Do not include windows, doors, or accessories. Warning! Don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build to grow your business, call General Steel today. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building if you call now. For example, a 40 by 60 foot building is still less than $25,000. Even an 80 by 150 foot building is under $99,000.
Imagine 12,000 square feet for under $99,000.
This building is designed for your needs, no wasted space. And you get the General's quality and 50-year structural warranty at a price you can afford. You can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction by calling General Steel today. As much as half. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great. Call now. 877-61-STEEL.
It's not too late. Call.
877-61-STEEL. That's 877-617-8335.
Thanks for being with us. Looking for an unusual gig that's sure to make you the toast of any party? Moneyish.com has identified three current openings that seem wildly interesting. First, if you love eating avocados, Australia's first avocado cafe is hiring a, quote, head of avo control. Ahead of its opening on November 2nd, the Avo Aficionado is responsible for taste testing the 20 new dishes at a place called Good Fat, a pop-up eatery launching in Sydney. No salary, but you eat brunch free every day for a month in Australia. If beer is more to your taste, then this position at London's Meantime Brewing Company could be your speed. It's looking for a beer taster to come in 3 hours per week, Friday mornings, to join a panel of brewers in sipping and discussing new and innovative beers. But perhaps the most coveted position on the planet right now is at the New York Times, which plans to pay someone to visit its current list of 52 places to go across the globe for an entire year. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
President Trump met with Senate Republicans in hopes of forging the kind of party unity needed to pass tax reform before next year's congressional elections, even as he and Tennessee Senator Bob Corker reignited a feud with another round of insults. Corker emerged from the lunch meeting without answering questions from reporters, but earlier in the day called out the president.
Standing up in front of the American people and stating untruths that everybody knows to be untrue, just the attempted bullying that he does, which everybody sees through.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says lunch went well.
We've been looking for the opportunity to do this literally for years. We now have a president who will sign it, who believes in what we're trying to do, and we're going to concentrate on what our agenda is and not any of these other distractions that you all may be interested in.
With a tax plan, Trump is still trying for a major legislative win after Republicans failed this summer to pass legislation to dismantle Obamacare. Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign and the Democratic National Committee helped fund political research into President Trump that ultimately produced a dossier of allegations about his ties to Russia. The revelation, first reported by the Washington Post, is likely to fuel complaints by Trump that the dossier, which the president has derided as phony stuff, is a politically motivated collection of claims. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal says the Manhattan Attorney's Office is pursuing an investigation into possible money laundering by Paul Manafort. Adding to the federal and state probes concerning the former Trump campaign chairman, a spokesman for Manafort declined comment. Well, if you're heading to the World Series, it's going to cost you. For the second year in a row, the average resale ticket price for World Series games is over $1,000. That hadn't happened in recent World Series history before last year's matchup between the Cubs and Indians, when some average resale ticket prices were going for $4,500. Data from SeatGeek shows the average resale ticket price is above $1,000 for the first four games of this Houston-LA series.
Wow. I wouldn't pay that, nor would you.
No.
But would you pay $1,000 to see, say, a college football game of your choosing?
Depends. Depends.
I want to know what it depends on.
National championship?
You would do
of
it?
My team?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, wow. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. A guy who runs an adventure company has turned a crazy idea into reality. It was like a scene straight out of a Pixar movie. One man, a lawn chair, and 100 colorful helium balloons floating thousands of feet above the ground. CBS News says Tom Morgan flew 15 miles across South Africa last week, reaching heights of up to 8,000 feet, spent 2 days inflating 100 balloons ahead of the flight. Monday, strapped himself into a chair surrounded by safety supplies and was on his way. Mr. Morgan admitted feeling somewhere between terrified and elated as he rose in the air. The flight accelerated quickly as the balloons drifted towards the inversion layer of the atmosphere where the temperature drops. He eventually started cutting the balloons to gradually lower himself back down after floating for about 2 hours. Mr. Morgan, who runs The Adventurists, an adventure company in Bristol, England, now planning to set up the first ever competitive helium balloon race in Africa. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.